So tonight's class is the 12th in our Genjo Koan series. Tonight, it's quite a long section of the Genjo Koan that we're covering tonight, which if by any chance there's anybody here who's unfamiliar, this is a relatively short text by Zen Master Dogen. He lived in the 1200s. This is from Japan, one of our Dharma ancestors in our particular lineage. And the Genjo Koan is just a few pages long, and it's one of our most beloved of Dogen's texts, and very, very rich. So we have spent, you know, many, many weeks delving into it, just, you know, a section at a time. The tonight's section is the longest section that we will have approached of all, so it's about, and we'll read a translation of it, but it's about the fish and the birds flying through the sky and the fish not being be able to leave the water and all this kind of stuff. Because it all, like, it's all of a section, but it's three long paragraphs. So I did not have time. I kind of tried, but I did not have time to go through it line by line with the kanji the way that I did in previous ones. But I did come up with my own translation of a sorts, looking at the sources that I have, which have the kanji, which is the Japanese characters that Dogen wrote this in. And, you know, basic translations word for word. And then I also borrowed from some of my favorite translations, which to me seemed to involve the least interpretation. I like to try to get as close as possible to Dogen's words, even though there's some awkwardness there. Sometimes a little extra translation and interpretation actually helps you understand what Dogen meant. But I want to share, I will share my screen and show you this document, but as usual, I will also put a link in the chat to a PDF if you prefer to pull up a PDF on your device. So that's my document for tonight. If you want to pull it up yourself. And then for those of you who just prefer to have me share my screen, I will do that. And rearrange my Zoom screen so I can see a few of you. Okay. So, first of all, I wanted to share with you because, so Genjo Koan is the title of this text, but in tonight's passage, the term Genjo Koan appears twice. So I actually wanted to visit what does Genjo Koan mean again. We talked about it a little bit at the beginning, but you can see from the those characters in the little table. So the first is Gen, second is Jo, the third is Ko, and the fourth is On. So Ko-On in this case is not the same Ko-On as like in Rinzai Zen, the problem or the teaching story that you absorb yourself in and try to resolve. This is different. Somewhat similar, but and so these are different words that, you know, these characters are so rich. It's such a rich writing form. They're not only are the characters, they've evolved from other characters and sometimes composed of different characters, but they tend to have many different meanings. I mean, our words can have many different meanings as well, but there seems to be more possibility, more poetic possibilities in these characters. So Gen can be manifest, present, actual, revealed, self-existing, or self-evident. And Joe is become, accomplish, attain, complete, or perfect. And then Koan, Ko is common or public, general, sameness, ultimate equality. Dawn is proposition, suggestion, idea, plan, individuality. So above that, just above the chart, you can see this is a definition that I lifted from Shunryu Suzuki Roshi. And it's not necessarily that I just believe this is it. It's amazing how many different ways the title of Genjo Koan is translated by different respected translators. So Shohaku Okamura, we recite his translation. He says, actualization of reality. That's his translation of Genjo Koan. So Suzuki Roshi says, originally a koan was an official order from a king. So koan means the first principle, which we have to understand from various aspects and experience through practice. What we normally call koans are examples of realizations by Zen masters of this first principle. Genjo means everything. Koan means first principle. Genjo means the various activities we do as our practice is extended from Zazen. It is the oneness of everyday life and practice as attained through pure practice. So I can promise you that you're not going to walk away tonight with like, ah, got it, that's what Genjo Koan means. It's a very elusive kind of thing. I feel like we just kind of let ourselves get washed in these various ideas and concepts and don't worry too much about capturing them. Particularly because, and I like this, this was from a, and this is available on the Brightway Zen website, on the Genjo Koan class page. There's a link to two versions of the text that have the characters and a word-for-word translation and different translations offered. And this is from a old, God, it's probably from 70s, early 70s, from San Francisco Zen Center. That's where the quote from Shunryu Suzuki comes from. And it's now a PDF, but somebody just scanned this kind of handwritten text. It was probably mimeographed at the time and handed out to the different people in this Genjo Koan class. So in this, it said, in that text, it concludes, the term Genjo Koan, which appears twice in the work itself towards the end, and is encountered here and there elsewhere in Shobogenzo, Dogen's other writings, is an important concept for Dogen. One that may even be said to give expression to his personal realization of the Buddhist Dharma. The words themselves are impossible to give adequate English translation. As often is the case, Dogen uses them in his own peculiar way, stretching the words to their limits in order to get the most meaning from them in accord with his own understanding. So this really made me realize how poetic Dogen's writings are. And, you know, I'm looking at them and I'm like, what is he saying? When you know, look at these word-for-word translations. And then I look at these, the San Francisco Zen Center document offers, I think, 5 or 6 different translators' versions. And I'll read them, we're like, they don't have any idea what he's saying either. Like, they're just, they're all kind of all over the map. So anyway, with that said, I do think it's fun, but I do want to, I think the most important thing is to invite you to wrestle with the meaning in the words yourself. Sometimes there are clear metaphors being employed, and we don't have to completely guess, but a lot of times it is very poetic and open to our interpretation. So tonight's passage starts with, this is, like I said, I've taken you line by line, but this is just the summation of what I thought was the best translation. Fish move through water, and yet for them there is no edge of the water. Birds fly through the sky, and yet there is no edge of the sky. So it probably is obvious, but this passage isn't about fish or birds. This passage is about us. So we are the fish and the birds and the water and the sky. What is the water and the sky? So that'll be something that we'll be talking about. However, from the beginning, fish and birds have not been free from the water and sky. So Shohaku Okamura says they never reached the end of the sky, but in the kanji, it really said there is no edge to the sky. It doesn't talk about the birds and the fish, you know, trying to reach the end. It's just there is no end. There's no edge, limit, boundary. I mean, and okay, you can think about, well, there's kind of an edge to the water, right? But if you think about it, like the fish doesn't have a concept of like what's outside the water. So there's just the water, and it'll go back into the water, right? There's not. So from the beginning, they've not been free from the water and sky. Oh, go back a little bit. Back to this idea of Genjo Koan, give us a little more context for why we care about fish and birds. So I was thinking yet another translation of Genjo Koan could be the principle of accomplishing actualization. So if you take koan as being a principle, and then that gen of being actual, revealed, self-existing. And I feel like this is pointing us toward the question of how do we become a real person? How do we become an authentic person, fulfilling our potential? I don't know about all of you and exactly what your experience is, but I suspect that many of us have a sense and have had a sense for a long time that there is an actual person, either within us or, yeah, I guess within us, that is often covered over, that often is not revealed, is not manifest in the world. A deeper self, perhaps, a more authentic self. And in that self-existing or self-evident, we're not pointing toward, you know, the aggrandizement of a small self, but more finding that true person who really exists despite all of our flaws, despite all of our limitations, this being is real. So I feel like the fish and the birds, they are on this journey to accomplish actualization, to become authentic, to fulfill their potential. So if we are the birds, if we are the fish, what is the sky? What is our sky? What is your sky? What's the domain of it? The sphere of it? This is, our domain is not bounded, just like the sky. And yet, it's finite. By its very nature, it's finite. We cannot go everywhere, be everywhere. And this isn't just physical. We have wandered around this world for many, many years, but we've never reached the edge of our life, meaning an edge on the other side of which is not our life. It's all just our life. No matter how far we go, we don't find anything that is not our life. We may find things we don't like or we don't understand, but it's all our life. Feel free if anybody has any comments or questions to raise your hand. And if you're on Zoom, I may not be able to see you, but there is a raise hand feature. If you go on under reactions, you can click the raise hand and then your hand will come up and I'll see you on the screen. So from the beginning, in terms of this, birds and fish have never been free from the water and sky. That sounds a little negative, but from the beginning, we have not been free of just this. We can't get outside our own body-mind. Even if we have momentary intuitions of something greater, we remain in our life. But when the need is great, says it's just that when the need is great, the use is great. When the need is small, the use is small. Like this, there is no such thing as beings exhausting their frontiers, although there is also no such thing as a place where they do not tread or fly. So this is really existential stuff. When the need is great, I'm not saying that this is an exhaustive interpretation of what Dogen's saying, but if you think about the different human lives and how some of us, some people live very complex, involved lives. I mean, think about the life of the president and all the people that he impacts and all the things that he's involved in, how long his day is every day. Like, it's a very large domain. You know, and then you think of many of us, we tend to have a smaller domain. At some point in our life, perhaps because of old age or illness, our domain might become even smaller. Maybe we don't work for money anymore. Maybe health keeps us closer to home. Energy limits our activities. Now our domain is smaller. And, you know, then even we just did a death and dying workshop, and one of the things that happens at the end of life is like, now your domain, if you have time to go through the process relatively slowly, your domain shrinks until it's really just that room, it's really just the bed, it's really just your body. So, I mean, this is kind of just a literal way to interpret this. But I find it very encouraging Because to me, it says in a way that the value or the preciousness or the legitimacy, I don't know, whatever you want to describe it, of a human life is not measured by its domain. That it's a complete life even when the domain is small. So someday, when my domain shrinks down and it's just very, very simple and quiet, that can be full. That can be a whole life. So, trying to think of when to stop and get you all to jump in a little bit. All right, let me go a little further. So, but I do want you to consider that question of what does it mean that a life is complete, even though its domain might be small? What makes a life complete? And in this existential sense, right, there's a lot of ways that we could look at a life with a small domain, and we can say, well, you know, they still are friendly to people and they still have impacts, but that's a little more concrete and externally focused. This is a little more existential, if you will. So then, if we leave our everyday life, we die. So if birds leave the sky, they immediately die. If fish leave the water, they immediately die. One should know that by means of water, life is lived. And one should completely know that by means of the empty sky, life is lived. So Shohaku Okamura says, what does he say? It's on page 40. Let's see. If a bird departs from the sky or a fish leaves the water, it immediately dies. We should know that for a fish, water is life. For a bird, sky is life. And just delving over the kanji, it is not straightforward. Who is what is and how the relationship between these characters are. So, E is by means of, with, or because. So by means of, with, or because of water, and then life, for, be of use, do, try, serve as, is another E, is. And so life becomes of use, life serves as, I don't know, I took a wild guess and I thought, if life is functioning, it is being lived. And I liked that by means of water, by means of the empty sky. So if we look at the domain of our everyday lives as water or sky, and by the domain of our everyday lives, we mean, you know, waking up in the morning. How do you open your eyes? How do you sit up? How do you greet the day? Taking those steps. The first things you do, getting your coffee, saying hello to those you live with, going about your responsibilities, brushing your teeth, washing your hair, taking care of your relationships, driving on errands, like every single thing that you do. This is our domain as a human body mind. completely mundane. Our domain, each of our domain is completely, we may have overlapping domains with certain people in our lives, but ultimately we really, it's our function and our domain. And should we be able to leave that, we would immediately die. I mean, so we can't. Not that we would like really have the option. And therefore, one should know that it's by means of this mundane everyday life, it's by means of the water, by means of this, that life is lived. And I like to think that this life is lived is pointing back toward that aspiration of, you know, becoming authentic, becoming present, attaining what is self-evident, accomplishing actualization. I think that's what life is lived. That happens by means of our mundane everyday existence. And then before I ask you some questions, I want to share with you this passage with, you should know, by means of water life is lived, and by means of the empty sky life is lived. So that, I should have included the kanji for that too. But then it continues this little passage here. Because of birds, life is lived. Because of fish, life is lived. Because of life, a bird must be a bird. Because of life, a fish must be a fish. So Shohaku Okumura says, and this is always, I always want to chuckle at this part of the text, which is like, God, what? So we should know that for a fish, water is life. For a bird, sky is life. A bird is life. A fish is life. Life is a bird. Life is a fish. And we should go beyond this. There is practice enlightenment. This is the way of living beings. So I wanted you to see, you know, when Dogen's translated as one of these and this and that and that and this is that, and like it seems to just be a tautology and go back on itself. You know, he's taking characters and he's putting them in different orders. So in this case, it's E, which is that by means of, or with, or because. And then there's Cho, is bird. And then there's E, another E, for, be of use, do, try, serve as. May is life, and Adi is exist, or this is the case. So like, this is very straightforward to translate. What it's, you could say, so he translates that as a bird is life. I don't know. So I like, because of birds, life is lived. By means of birds, may Adi. Because of fish, by means of fish, life is lived. So if we go back to this, life is lived as this is the actualization of reality. It's because it's by means of you and me. It's by means of ordinary sentient beings that this happens. Because of life, a bird must be a bird. So once again, we have the by means of, but then we're switching bird and life. Now by means of life, the bird must be, and the same goes for the fish. So I like that, to think that that's, because of the way reality is, we must be what we are. We must be ordinary beings. So, hopefully that wasn't just too utterly befuddling. Any any questions or comments? What does it, you know, like I say, what does it mean for a domain to be large or small? What does it mean to be a bird or a fish? Mick and then Dave.
I like this bit of Dogen because I feel like everything kind of becomes scrambled eggs and you can't make any sense of it. And then, like, after a little bit, it kind of shifts into place. And for me, like, this is the scrambled eggs part. Like, it's all a mess. But then in the next paragraph, he says, when we make this very place our own, our practice becomes the actualization of reality. When we make this path our own, our activity naturally becomes actualized reality. And I guess that's sort of like, I don't know, that just makes me think that like this is all here. Everything that's mundane is it. I mean, you know, to for me, like going beyond the water or going beyond the sky is getting caught up in these like imaginary worlds of the future where like, ooh, if I could just do this and I could have this and all this. And that's, you know, the life is here. It's in the water. It's in the present moment. And to make that my own, to live in that is to actualize reality.
Thank you. Dave.
So as we were going through that, I was reflecting on how many people have been in my life. Because like most of us, you know, we undergo changes. And I feel like there was a time when I was a bird and my range was great. And I've also been a fish. Mm-hmm. And in each of those times, I think that I was indistinguishable from my circumstances. Like the circumstances and who I was at that time were sort of completely merged. And I suspect that I'm a rock now, so I don't know what my range is. But I don't know. The idea of the bird dying, I don't know if it really dies or it just the circumstances change and it becomes whatever the circumstances require at that time.
Yeah, it is an interesting image. Like, I don't necessarily connect with the idea of it dying. I mean, I can understand the idea of it saying it can't go anywhere other than the sky. But Dogen very specifically said, if it leaves the sky, it immediately dies. Ryan.
Yeah, I think to me, it kind of like can potentially speak to this feeling of like enoughness that I feel like one can kind of get caught up in a lot of like, is my life enough? Is my range, is my reach, in whatever way that means to me, like enough. And when you are focusing on what's right in front of you, you can kind of get caught up in that anxiety trap of like, could it be more? And so when you realize that, yeah, like what is right in front of you, what, and just like the active participation is the actualization. Yeah, I don't know. I also like it. And I like the poetic swapping of the words because it's very like, I don't know, puts you right in the middle of it all.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. So to bring it, into that next paragraph, which is frankly, or the next two, as I've broken them up, they're really my favorites. So if there were birds or fish who would go through water or sky only after thoroughly mastering water or thoroughly mastering sky, they couldn't attain a path or a place. So Shohaku Okamura says they couldn't, only after investigating the entire ocean or sky. So this idea of mastering, or like, I've got it all figured out and mapped out now. And I like won't go, and I love that, like a couple of people have commented already, like, I mean, it's kind of ridiculous that you would say like, oh, I'm not gonna fly or swim unless I figure this out. So we can't really not fly or swim, but we can live half-heartedly, right? We can withhold, postpone until this happens or that happens, or I understand this or I attain this, then I'll really, you know, relax and swim and live. Gatham.
Don't, you know, he's never saying just one thing. To me, one of the things I'm hearing here is the sky and the water are also standing in for the Dharma. And if we end up trying to master the Dharma, if we try and read every book, if we try and talk to every teacher, we're never going to find our path. I mean, it's just, that's not the way. I mean, really, your Dharma, the Dharma is everything. How can you understand the entire universe? We can't even see most of it. So in the end, you have to realize the Dharma that is in your space, is a part of your space.
Mm-hmm. And it's going to be your path. Going to be your particular path, which isn't going to look like any other path. You can't know for sure. It's relevant even to say, is it the best path? Because it's like, well, you know, it's your own unique path. It's the path that you're on. And then this path and place, I think, is very interesting. It appears a couple times in this passage where, you know, it's like if you are, oh, and then so it goes, one attains this place when one's daily life actualizes reality. So that's Genjo Koan. One attains this path when one's daily actions or activities actualize reality. Again, Genjo Koan. So there's this interesting, like he's talking about a place and a path. And to me, that's speaking to, you know, place is here and now. It's right here, right now. It's a sense of vital, boundless life, which we are participating in. And a path is a direction. And so it might imply that the path needs to be based on like future results. The path is about the future and is an abstraction from right here, right now, which is the only thing that's real. But from the Buddhist point of view, I mean, to a certain extent, of course, you choose a path based on the direction you want to go. But ultimately, this path is not about future results. It's not about the future. It's just about right now. It's about the step that you take right now. Kathleen.
Unmute myself. For me, this is kind of working like poetry in combination with the paragraph before where he says that we only see or grasp as far as the power of our eye of study and practice can see. And when we listen to the reality of myriad things, we must know that there are inexhaustible characteristics in both ocean and mountains. And then I put it together like with this fish and the bird and me, and it's like, I have my little piece of the, you know, sky that I perceive and am acting within. And at the same time, you're over there having your experience and perceptions. And there's a whale, right, that's migrating from South America up the Pacific coast, and it's having its own experiences of perceptions. And that each of us, each every living being is in its own way, moment by moment, actualizing reality. And that there's like all these shimmering, overlapping, interwoven, because we're breathing the same air and swimming in the same ocean, but having our own, and it's like evocative of that kind of jeweled net, you know, that like all these shimmering things and realities, each happening and unfolding moment by moment, intertwined. And it's that's like, you just can't in a linear way say that. And that kind of experience is evoked here. And it helps you be content with your, to me, to be content with my own particular piece of it.
Yeah, there is. You know, what you're speaking about makes me think of how often, and that not just with Dogen, but particularly with Dogen, sometimes I'll think, like, why can't they just say it? Why can't they just explain it? You know, why do they have fish and birds and, you know, why does it have to be so obscure? But once you really get a personal taste of what this is about, you recognize, like, well, actually, that really can't say it any better than that. Like, you just, in preparing for this class, I felt so inadequate tonight, because to me, these couple paragraphs just speak perhaps the most profound and subtle and existential dharma that we study. And, you know,
yeah,
you can't really talk about it. Hopefully I just convey some of it by how I feel about it. But it can't really be, well, I mean, it can be spoken of, but we talk about it as like it's a finger pointing to the moon, right? Does it evoke something in you?
Yeah.
Not, it can't really explain it per se. So I love the, when attains this place and this path through this actualization of reality, there's that. It's like an encouraging thing. But this way, this place, so this here and now moment isn't great or small. It isn't self or other. It isn't from before, and therefore isn't suddenly manifest. So it, like, Dogen always likes to take your mind, like, blow it open a little bit wider. In this way, if a person practices and verifies the Buddha way, when they attain one dharma, they fully penetrate one dharma. When they meet one action, they fully practice one action. In this state, the place exists and the way is mastered. So in that actualization of reality, the place exists and the way is mastered. Since the edge of the knowable cannot be known, we can't even reach the end of the possibly knowable universe. The reason it is so is that this knowing, so I mean, not the knowing, you can't know the unknown, you can't know the unknowable, but the knowing of this dharma, this action, this place, this way, and the perfect realization of the Buddha Dharma appear together and are experienced together. So somehow, it is possible to experience, to know, to tap into the universal, even though we are these small, separate beings, each in our own little domain. To realize our non-separateness from the universe, from all that which is not you. You can't even leave the water. And this sounds impossible, but only because we're trying to grasp what realization might mean with our minds. Dogen is telling us that the universal and our realization of it is not what we imagine it is. So it's really not a problem. Questions or comments or...
May I ask a question?
Yeah.
And this is a genuine question. I have no idea if this is completely nuts or not. But when I think about birds not being able to leave the sky, where they would immediately die, I can't help but think about the part where firewood doesn't become ash, even though, you know, in our practical experience, we've seen firewood become ash, but we talk about firewood exists in the position of firewood, ash is in the position of ash, fish are fish, birds are birds. I don't know. That's just a genuine question.
Yeah, that makes sense to me. A bird which has left the sky is no longer a bird. I mean, kind of that by definition, a fish lives in water and a bird lives in the air.
I mean, in the first part, we've seen firewood become ash in our lives. That's an experience we have. We haven't seen birds become fish. But I don't know if these are these things work together or if they're talking about something completely different.
I don't know. I think it's just saying that we're dependent on our life, on our body, mind, on the domain of our life. The only way we could leave it would be to die. Charles says, there's also the kingfisher bird that hunts fish, but. People have a sense of what it means to actualize reality. Do you feel like you do that sometimes? Manage to do that sometimes in the course of your everyday life?
I mean, I'll jump in and say, like, I think this for me is one of the kind of like almost frustrating parts of practice, because on the one hand, it's like I wake up in the morning, I do my things, like how am I not living my life, right? Like, and Dogen is beautiful and poetic, but like, are you telling me something that I don't know already? That's what I struggle so much with Dogen in particular, is like, are you telling me things that I already know, or are you telling me something that I don't know? And I honestly don't know the answer. I don't know, like, do I know this already or not?
And
I just feel confused. Like,
now you're just giving us a little intro to the last part of the Genjo Koan. Zen Master Mount Magoo is waving a fan. And the monk says, so again, it's not about fans and it's not about wind. The wind is this, is the Dharma, is this truth, is this deeper truth, which we're saying is just available. It's right here. It's in your everyday life. And the fan is practice. Why do we have to practice? Like, why is this not obvious? Why is it a problem?
The Dharma is action, is what I get from the fan waving. And I'll sit in the chair for a minute.
Sure.
this is the sense that I'm getting from this. So it made me think of it when we talked about waving the fan, because the waving the fan part is the part that resonates with me most often. And I think that when you were talking earlier about how this is all about, to me, living your life, living it to the fullest, without there being that gap that we've talked about. An example I think of is work practice. If the need is small, if you're doing something as small as polishing a small piece of china, if you do that fully, you inhabit that domain completely. If you're not present with what you're doing, it's kind of like the bird has left the sky or the fish has left the water. Don't know about the dying immediately part. But to me, it's there's action and then there's speculation. And the waving the fan is the action. And you're not going to move the air. You know, I think obviously we all think that waving the fan is a metaphor for practice. And practice is action, and action is completely living, completely filling the domain that you're in it in the present moment.
I like it. Thank you. Ruth Ann?
As a young adult, I felt that life supports life. So Dogen's poetry imagery works for me. The fish appreciates the water fully, authentically, as the bird does the sky, and vice versa. In that we are water, we are the sky, and also the creatures in both. Because when we practice, we step out of the domain we think we control and can name and et cetera. So when we practice, we are part of that jeweled net and surrender in the sense to the evocative universal we don't have to be able to explain. As Buddha says, why investigate the sword that's struck you? You were hit. So go from there. So thank you for your class tonight.
Thank you. Yeah, I think the that question of being told there's nothing lacking, just live your everyday life with no gaining idea, and yet, well, then what are we practicing for? And when I practice and I read all this kinds of stuff and we study, it seems to imply that there's more that I should experience or get, and I don't have it yet. So then I feel inadequate. So then I'm further away from feeling like my life is enough all on its own. So practice seems to just cause a problem sometimes. And frankly, even if we know that, right, theoretically, it's just this, and we should just embrace our lives exactly as they are and be right here, right now, it's not that easy. There's just a million reasons why we want to resist this. This is the nature of dukkha, right? It's just, and it can be very, very subtle. Like in Portland, you know, our summer is finally over and it's dark. It's just dark. Gotta have lights on inside all day. You gotta turn your headlights on when you drive. It's just dark. And like, just found myself feeling funky for the last week or so. And just noticing this, you know, this sense of like, there's not even any rational objection that's along with it. It's just a subtle, feels like a subtle separation from my life. There's so many reasons why we do this. We gotta get stuff done, we're worried about stuff, whatever. And to come all the way around to being able to embrace our life, this person completely actually involves a long journey. At least it did for me. And I'm not there yet, you know? It doesn't end. It's always another level of letting go and acceptance and embrace. So I'll leave it there. Dedicate the merit of this Sangha meeting to all, so that they may be able to obtain the truth. All Buddhas throughout space and time, all honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas, wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita.
There we go.
Good night.